Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, joined by my team member Candace Klein. We are financial advisors with Gateway Wealth Management at UBS. We're located in Charlotte, North Carolina, and can be reached at 704-362-8260. Our guest today is Todd Richardson with Ask Sentinel AI. Todd is not affiliated with UBS, and his views are his own. So Todd, I know you're working in a startup now, but you've got a lot of experience starting a business at large multinational companies. Tell us a little bit about kind of how you started and your track to being such a growth-oriented executive, and what you've done is incredible.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a fun story. I mean, probably the beginning. I've been in the property services space for most of my career. In fact, when I was in college, the business school, they would make us go to different kind of internships, and I rotated through a couple in really interesting ones like Drexel and Arthur Anderson, who are no longer around, including this real estate company called Van Camp & Morrison Stone, VMS. And so I was there doing 10-key ledger, budget ledgers, all day long, just adding up column after column. And I remember going to the manager after the end of the day and saying, hey, I have this job at the university where we have a computer and spreadsheets, and you can do this on the computer. It's really not that hard to do. I can show you. And they're like, oh, no. So that was kind of like the beginning of my tech career. I actually brought the VMS leadership to campus and showed them how to do it. And I ended up setting up their first network. That was my first job, was in real estate working for VMS, and pretty much have been in real estate and facility services since then. I stopped counting after 20. So you mentioned 20 years, but it's been a little bit more than that. Yeah, I just progressively moved throughout my career, just asking for more responsibility, until ultimately it culminated in an opportunity at CBRE, which is a big global real estate services company, and had an opportunity to start a business for them, which was their life sciences business. And I was employee number one of that business. They really didn't have a life sciences focus at that point, and so it was my responsibility to start and grow that. Fast forward to today, I want to say that business is somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $3 billion in turnover. It's a global business, and they're really the world leader in real estate services for life sciences companies. So very proud of that, and it's a big team now. It's over 6,000 people, so it was exciting to grow that and be a big part of that.
Were they starting that business and looking for somebody to run it, or did you bring the idea to them? How did that come about?
It's probably a little bit of both. I was working at the time, I was in corporate development and growth for what is now Cushman Wakefield. So I had the sales team and marketing and corporate development. And I had heard that CBRE was in the process of acquiring this company from Johnson Controls. It was a facilities-related company, and they had a life sciences focus. And I always had an affinity, for various reasons, to the life sciences, and reached out to the CEO at the time that, hey, I hear you're buying this business, and I don't know if you're aware, but you're going to acquire a nice little life sciences business as part of that. And if you don't have anybody in mind to run that, I would love to talk with you about that. And so 2 weeks later, I was in his office, and 2 weeks after that, I resigned from Cushman and started that journey. Unfortunately, by the time we acquired Johnson Controls, they had 5 life sciences clients. 3 had already terminated. And so I had 2 left to work with. So we really had to build from scratch. And even those were on life support. So it took us a while to stabilize that business and then grow from there. But that's kind of how it started.
I mean, that's a pretty short period of time, from almost zero to multi-billion. I mean, how do you grow something that quickly?
Yeah, it was almost entirely organic. So the beginning was a little scary. For almost a year, we didn't have any growth. Again, a lot of what we focused on was trying to stabilize what we had and create reference clients. And so most of my focus was that, just holding on to the few pieces of business that we had. We were able to do that. And during that time, I'm desperately looking for a new business because growth is everything, right? And that's always been a big part of my focus, is being client facing and in front of clients. And so finally had an opportunity where one of my former employees went to one of the big pharma companies, and I pursued him vigorously. And we were successful ultimately in securing that business. And that was really the seed business for the rest of it. And so from there, it was just a domino effect of building the business organically and working off of our reputation. And that kind of has been a pattern in my career of working on very, very tight, close relationships, trying to solve problems for those clients, and then asking them to be an evangelist for our business. And so it worked. We ended up running the table because actually one of our big competitors was the 800-pound gorilla in that space. And we pretty much ran the table. Pretty every RFP that came out after that, we were pretty successful securing all or part of those businesses. And so that's how we did it. Really reputation and focus and delivering something a little bit different than our competition.
So that aggressive growth, how do you balance that aggressive growth with, say, sustained profitability, right? Sometimes if you're growing quickly, maybe it's not as profitable. How do you balance that and kind of deliver on the targets that I imagine you had?
It was a very competitive market. And so knowing that we had to be even more aggressive up front, because we were creating a business and trying to create qualifications, we made concessions that probably wouldn't have. But we wanted to get market share and create some excitement. So we were willing to make some concessions up front. And those contracts can be long-term too. So you make a concession in a contract like that, a big outsourcing contract, those contracts can go for 3 to 5 years easily. And so you're kind of married to what you sign up for. So it was a big gamble, but it paid off. But ultimately, we were able to secure above market terms because we were offering some things that were just very different from the competition. And they were willing to pay a premium for that.
Fast forwarding to today, now you're at Ask Sentinel. What exactly does that company do, and how do you do it?
Yeah, I am so excited about this new venture. So I haven't been in the startup space for over 25 years. So this is getting back into a startup, although I'm running two businesses now. One is Bird Call, which is an AI voice agent business where we support customer experience, like inbound and outbound calls for customers, and help desk type work where we're augmenting live agents. And so that was the core business. From that sprung Sentinel, which is a facility services business. So now it's an opportunity for me to apply kind of my experience in the real estate and facility space to an AI application to do something very different in the space and very needed. So just a little bit more about that. What we actually do is we have integrated a voice agent solution with video capture and large language model learning to manage the entire property repair business, and very eloquently knit together providers and requesters, you know, property managers, facility managers, with the trades in a very unique way to make it a lot easier for them to connect and get things done.
Can you give us like a layman's term example of?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way it kind of works is, unlike today, a manager will get a call from a tenant, for example, hey, the air conditioning's not working. Uh-huh. And they'll put in a work order, and then they'll go look for a contractor, and then they'll schedule the appointment with the contractor and the tenant, and then they'll get a quote and they'll have to approve it, and then the contractor will go back out and do the work, and then they'll get an invoice and they'll have to approve that, and on and on and on. It's a very manual process. What we've created is this. You give this application to the tenant and they talk to it with their phone. So they can go on an app, or they can scan a QR code in the space, or they get a link from the manager to say, here's how you solve your problem. They open up their phone, it starts talking to them. What's the problem? It'll go through an entire triage, ask them to turn on their camera. It will videotape the entire issue, so it collects all that rich information that then gets packaged to the provider as a very defined scope of work of what they need to do with a not to exceed amount. Hey, do you want this work? Yes. Okay, great. Then it schedules it with the occupant. They do the work. They videotape that it's been completed. All that gets packaged back up to the manager, and we handle all the invoicing and payment for them. So literally all they have to do is give this to their tenant and it gets done.
Wow, so it sounds like it saves a ton of time and energy.
Time, energy, cost. Yeah. The really wonderful thing about it and part of our mission is it's allowing the local trade, the local provider, to be more successful, because what's happened in the industry is there's been a lot of roll up with private equity. There's a lot of aggregators that have aggregated all these businesses. So it's layers upon layers to get the work. What this really does is kind of like what Uber did to the cab companies. It's really allowing the person who's doing the work to be successful on their own, which we're really excited about.
Does the marketplace intuitively see this as a solution or kind of the next evolution in your business? Or are you finding that you're having to go out and educate the market that, hey, this is here, we can solve this problem for you?
I would say the majority of people we're talking to, both investors and clients, they see it and it's an epiphany, right? It's like, oh my God, really? You can do that? And they're excited and they want to start. There's always going to be that segment of the market that is a little bit concerned about AI in general or changes to their current process. The nice thing about this solution is it integrates very well within our client's process. So we don't have to completely disrupt the apple cart. We can work within their current process and find where it makes most sense for them. So there is a bit of a customization of how we apply the technology. But for the most part, pretty much across the board, we have found people are really excited about it and very quick to engage us to start a pilot. So far, so good.
I mean, how quickly do you potentially see this growing, let's say over the next 12 months, where we sit down a year from now and maybe redo this podcast?
Oh, yeah. Certainly we're a startup, so we're in the early stages of traction, and we only have about a half a dozen clients that we're working with at the moment. But our pipeline is already over $200 million in value, so it's probably going to get to a point where we're going to be switching gears from continually customizing the tool and enhancing the tool to operating. I can see that happening within months. So yeah, 12 months from now, I think this discussion will be very different and I'm going to be in the hire and go mode. We'll have a whole different set of challenges in front of us.
Can you foresee what those challenges might be? I mean, imagine as successful as you are, that's been a big part of your careers.
Yeah. Well, hey, anytime you're scaling a business, money is always one of the big challenges. And so we are engaging investors and we deliberately decided to do that a little earlier in the process. We have, you know, seed money to get the business up and running, and it is up and running. But at some point we need to scale, especially when you're talking about technology business where you're first to market in delivering something very novel. That's not an opportunity where you can sit on your laurels, right? We're going to need to grow quickly and we're going to need to raise money. There's a number of different avenues to do that, right? Certainly the venture capital market, and there's prop tech type venture capital companies that specialize in this type of a novel solution. And we're talking with all of them along with some of the big Sand Hill Road boys to see their interest as well. But we deliberately started that discussion early to make sure when we need it, we'll have it. And that has gone very well. So we're excited about that. But then we'll be looking at traditional capital sources as well and looking at how we manage all of those sources as we go forward and, you know, what kind of commitments we'll have to make to do those. That's all a big part of our strategy. don't know if I answered your question or not.
Okay, you did. I was asking about challenges ahead. And
yeah, that's a big one. Talent in general, you know, there's a lot of interest from a lot of people to get into the AI space, both the voice agent and what we're doing with the facilities repairs. And so I think one of the challenges too is going to be ferreting out the best talent for this business and people that understand our mission and can bring something to the table that's different and better than what we have. We're getting a lot of interest in people joining the company. So I do think that's going to be a challenge. It's a good challenge, but it's a challenge where we're going to have to filter out, you know, who is the best fit for this company. And there's pretty unique skill sets to run an AI-based business, no doubt. And also the landscape of challenges as the law starts to evolve with AI. We're already seeing that in California, for example, with our voice business, where they recently passed legislation that's now creating challenges for us and how we design that business and how we deploy that business. So it's changing very rapidly, and we're going to have to be able to adjust to those changes.
So going back to, you know, those plus clients who are maybe hesitant to adopt AI, is it just simply showing them your product and they're wowed? I mean, how do you get somebody over the hump that's really hesitant to that change?
Yeah, I think
it's the value.
I think there's two things. One thing we talked about, which is the mission of really empowering the little guy. And I think we have a very unique story in that there aren't a lot of AI applications where it is empowering the small business. So we have that, which is a great story. And I think the other piece too is with AI, a lot of people think a bit like ChatGPT or Claude, or they're putting information in, they're getting some product out. It's a written product, right? The way we describe our business is we're actually getting work done for them. When you look at tasks, the daily tasks of work, how can we eliminate those daily repetitive tasks of work? It's not just, hey, I want to absorb this report or put a spreadsheet together or facilitate a deck for a presentation. This is very different. This is interrupting repetitive tasks that happen every day for these personas. And so by describing it that way, it's like, yeah, that's value. And I don't think people always look at AI as a way to do those types of things. And so this is, for us, an easy story.
You know, in all your years of leadership, what's one leadership lesson you learned the hard way that really shaped your approach today? And maybe it's around finding the right people like you're talking about. I mean, and a lot of the business owners we talk to, one of the biggest challenges is hiring and managing, maybe letting people go when they need to. What's one lesson that's really shaped your approach today?
Yeah, there's probably a lot of answers to that question. I guess the way I look at it is, I think over time, I adopted more of kind of how can I be as transparent as possible about my feelings for something, right? Rather than, you know, a lot of times, like, my partners are more the cheerleaders of the business, and I tend to be more the pragmatist, I guess. And so with that, I'm trying to give as much unfiltered feedback as possible, and not everybody takes that well. And so I think you have to balance that kind of an approach with also creating an environment where people trust you. They're not going to get surprised that they know that you've got their back and that you can have those kind of conversations with them so we can get to the answer faster. So I think that's kind of my style, and I think that's worked for me. Yeah, I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
it does. Giving people feedback and the way that's delivered can be a challenge, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, and I think if you play it straight with people, and then they know where you're coming from, and you can have an honest discussion about how to get to the right answer faster. So I think that is helpful, especially when you're dealing with a large organization and you've got to move quickly to grow. We're not in the business of telling each other what we want to hear. We need to make good decisions and make good investments and move to fixing the problem as fast as possible. Every day, we have a set of problems in front of us, right? Mm-hmm. In any business, and I think that's when you have an environment where it's all about getting excited about the problem and fixing it, then people tend to, I think, be more loyal and more willing to share.
So when you have a challenge or a problem, let's say related to this technology, are you sort of dictating to your developers, programmers, what it needs to look like, or do they have a lot of autonomy to try to figure out the solution? I mean, how do you...
Just like anything, when you're trying to attack a problem, especially with technology, because there's usually lots of different solutions, right? I think first you want to do your due diligence, right? Collect as much data points as possible. That could be from the programming team. It could be from the coding team. It could be from the client. It could be from our operations team. It could be getting advice from other colleagues outside of the business. And so I think the best bet is always to try to get as much of a handle around on the problem as possible from a lot of different sources and let everybody contribute their thoughts. And then from there, hopefully there's a clear path, or you just have to make the best of the bad decisions. That's often one of the the things you have to do too, right? Is there's not always like a win-win in every decision, but start with understanding deeply and hopefully you get enough data points to make a good decision. And that could come from lots of different people in the organization.
I think I heard you say you get excited about problems and how to figuring out how to solve them. Is that your favorite part of the job, or what is your favorite part of your work?
I think it is. Yeah, I think problem solving is what good leaders are trying to do, right? You're trying to figure out how you can make your company and your product better for your customers, and you're solving their problems, right? So if you start with that premise that the business is to solve the customer's problems, then if you run away from problems, you're not going to be very successful. And if you're not listening to those problems, whether they're coming from, you know, from the client or from within the organization, somebody else is going to figure them out for you. And it may not be your company.
Looking back, it looks like you got a bit of runway left in your in this, you know, this new startup phase. But like looking back at your career, the most pivotal decision you've made that's kind of led to your trajectory, was it the, you know, moving into a life sciences business at CBRE, Bob?
Or was well, that had else? Nothing to do with getting me to this point. That we would have to rewind a number of years back where I met my partner and we had done a bunch of deals together, real creative, like engineered a bunch of companies to come together to solve problems for clients. But I would say just in general, probably the main aspect that got me here was, I think, a little bit of ADHD, right? A little bit of, at some point, you get restless about what you're doing and it's time to look to do something else or shake it up differently or take a risk in your career. I think one of the things when I look back, there have been a number of points in my career where I just jumped into a new career, a new industry, a new market that I knew nothing about in a leadership position, which is scary because you're no longer the expert. And now you're leading an organization without that domain expertise. Every time, though, it's been exciting and an unbelievable learning experience and an expansion of the network, right? Now I feel like I have so many friends out there that can help me find a way to solve a problem because I've been in so many different industries and met so many different people in different areas of business. And so I think that was also really helpful, is building that network, kind of taking the risk, being willing to take the plunge and try something new.
Yeah, a network like that takes decades to build. A lot of value in that. All right, great. Well, this has been fantastic. If people want to learn more about BirdCall or Sentinel and the work that you do, where do they go?
Yeah, so the websites are AI websites, of course. So you can go to asksentinel.ai, and that's the Sentinel facilities business, or the voice agent business, which is bird-call.ai. Either of those websites, I think, provide a lot of information about us and how we're different, what we're doing in the space.
Well, we appreciate all the lessons you've shared with us. And we're in an exciting time in this AI age, and appreciate the work you're doing, and wish you nothing but all the success in the world. And hopefully we can get you back here a year from now or so and get an update.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.